So I'm going to switch gears a little bit. Instead of talking about very specific experiments that that people have done, I'm going to talk about broad applications, how to use some of the instrumentation that is currently being used for photosynthetic and chlorophyll fluorescence research. So if you bear with me, I'll bring it forward a little bit and demonstrate it. Okay, so it's kind of going to be a little bit backwards as well. I'm going to set up an experiment, start the experiment. We're going to try to do a light curve in 20 minutes. We'll see how that goes. And then I'm going to explain what I'm actually doing and what we're actually looking at through this experiment. And then we'll come back to the instrument at the end and then look at the software a little bit more. But I want to get started with the experiment so that we have some data by the end of the 20 minutes. I'll explain what I'm doing as I go along. I'm going to connect with the instrument with the software here. And now you're able to see everything that I would see on the screen of this instrument. This is the LI6400. Again, I'll start the experiment and then we'll get into what exactly I'm talking about. So I'm going to start a new measurement. Here we see all of the data that's coming in. And I am currently clamped onto a cutting from a tree outside, citrus of some kind. And we'll ignore that for now. So I've started the experiment, and now I'll explain what exactly I'm doing. This is the LI6400XT, a product from Licor. We're based in Lincoln, Nebraska. We manufacture a variety of instrumentation for plant research, specifically light sensors, PAR sensors, and photosynthetic systems. We also manufacture other gas analyzers for CO2, water vapor, and methane, leaf area meters, things like that. This is one of the products that's used specifically for biostimulant research. As we saw earlier, biostimulants have a number of effects on plants, specifically increasing stress tolerance and also aiding with chlorophyll production and also improving quantum and carboxylation efficiency, how plants are able to use the carbon dioxide and the light they receive and transfer that into plant growth. These effects can be measured through a variety of ways. These are by no means the only ways to measure this, but this system here measures gas exchange and chlorophyll fluorescence simultaneously. So those are the things I'm going to focus on in the next 20 minutes. So how do we measure photochemistry? There are two ways that we can get a good idea of what the plant is doing in real time, and that would be gas exchange, measuring CO2 and water vapor, and then also chlorophyll fluorescence. And I'll talk about gas exchange first. And for those of you that might not be able to see, the LI6400 consists of two components. A console, the green console, has the electronics, has soda lime and desiccant, CO2 cartridge for specifically controlling how much CO2 goes to the plant. Also has the display and the logging capabilities, things like that. And then the gray sensor head is the system that actually contains the infrared gas analyzers, which I'll go into in a bit. It has the actual chamber that clamps down onto a leaf. There's a variety of chambers. The one we have on here today is for fluorescence and gas exchange. For this measurement, this system is an open gas exchange system. There are also closed systems. Some of the previous models, even from Licor, were closed systems where you essentially encapsulate the plant in a closed loop of air and see how the plant takes in carbon dioxide. The issue with that is the concentration inside that loop is constantly changing. With an open gas exchange system, you're flowing air from the source into the chamber, providing it to the leaf, and then it exits. And that way you can control how much CO2 is going to the leaf at all times. For that reason, you must know how much air you're flowing to the plant. This is, a steady state measurement. We're maintaining CO2. We can also maintain water vapor, temperature, humidity, and light. And it looks like that. We'll go to this one. In some previous models previous systems, the situation was much like the one up above, where you would have a reference infrared gas analyzer. Air would flow through that. You'd have a flow meter to the cuvette, where the leaf takes in carbon dioxide and gives off water vapor, and then flow the air back to the sample infrared gas analyzer. The problem with that is delay is a huge problem. You have one concentration of air in the reference erga, a different concentration in the sample erga, but they don't necessarily match up in the same time scale. So what we've done with the LI6400 is put the sample and reference ergas in the sensor head, splitting the air before they go into the cuvette so that you do have a true reference, instantaneous measurements. So your reference and your sample air coming in have exactly the same CO2 concentration, and then the leaf does the rest. Photosynthesis and transpiration are fairly easily calculated from this, as long as you know the flow and the difference in CO2 concentrations, or water vapor in the case of transpiration, divided by the area, which is also something that we know. Again, this is the basic idea behind these gas exchange systems. Would be that whatever CO2 is coming into the system is compared to the CO2 going out of the system, and whatever is missing was taken up by the leaf. The LI6400 uses a bit of a different equation. It also incorporates a water vapor term. So that would be WR and WS in this equation. This is due to the fact that there's so much more water vapor in the air than CO2 that you get an effective dilution inside the infrared gas analyzer. To back up a little bit, the infrared gas analyzer works like this. You shine a light, and you have a detector on the other end. Any light that's absorbed by CO2 is not going to reach the detector, and so you can get a good idea of how much carbon dioxide is actually inside that path length based on how much light is absorbed, is not making it to the detector. Those happen at very specific wavelengths, so we look at wavelengths for CO2, different wavelengths for water vapor, and then we also have reference wavelengths where CO2 and water vapor are not absorbed, so we know exactly how much light we're providing. Because of that, we can identify how much water vapor is absorbed in the sample path, in the reference path, and we need to account for that as we're trying to measure CO2. One of the many ways you can use the LI6400 is to measure light response. Essentially, you give the leaf different light levels and measure its CO2 assimilation. This is what a light response curve would look like. You have photosynthetically active radiation on the x-axis against what we would call photo in the LI6400, which would be photosynthetic assimilation on the y-axis. And typically you would see a number of things that you can learn from this light response curve. You can get the apparent quantum efficiency. So that would be, how well is my plant using light? How much CO2 is it, can it take in for each photon that it takes in? How much can it use? The light compensation point, that's where the line crosses zero, and that would be where the amount of CO2 given off by the leaf in respiration is equal to the amount of CO2 taken in by assimilation. And then you also get the dark respiration rate. That would be, well, essentially, it is what it sounds like, in the dark, how much CO2 is the leaf giving off. Then also at the asymptote, you do see some leveling off, and that would be light-saturated photosynthesis. What is the maximum I could possibly get? What is the highest photosynthetic rate? Along with that, we're able to measure chlorophyll fluorescence with this sensor head. It's a very different idea that doesn't compete with gas exchange anyway. It does add quite a bit to understanding photosynthetic rate. So in this picture we can see just some ground up spinach, and when you shine lights of certain wavelengths on it, it will actually glow red, and that is because the electrons you're providing hit the chlorophyll and raise it to an excited state. The excited state is not very stable. It wants to come back down to ground state, so it has to get rid of that energy somehow. It can obviously get rid of energy by using it for photosynthesis. It can also get rid of it by emitting it as heat or emitting it as light. So chlorophyll gives off this red light when you shine specific wavelengths on it, because most of the energy that it's absorbing gets used in photosynthesis, but not all of it can be. So you do get some heat given off and some fluorescence going given off. Now, unfortunately, we have to go through some math. I know it's not everybody's favorite, but to really understand fluorescence, you do have to do some mathematical conversions just to understand how this all works. I'll try to make it simple, but basically we have several competing processes that all add up to one. So however many photons the leaf gets, it has to use it one of three ways. There's actually a few other ways, but those are very minimal compared to these three, which would be fluorescence, heat, and photochemistry. At a saturating light intensity, so what we saw earlier, up at the asymptote of the light curve, when the plant is blasted with too much light, it can't keep up. It can't increase photochemistry. Also fluorescence and heat are kind of at their maximum during this time. So we see F equals FM, that's maximum, and P, photosynthesis, is zero because we can't add any more to it. So because of that, we can simplify that maximal heat equals 1 minus maximum fluorescence. If we assume that the ratio of heat to fluorescence does not change, whether you're at maximum intensity or lower intensities, you're able to perform this conversion. And then we can solve for heat and photochemistry if we measure fluorescence in non-saturating light and compare that to saturating light. Again, we don't have to go into all of that, but just know that the end result there is at the bottom. Just by measuring maximum fluorescence and steady state fluorescence, we're able to derive how much energy is going towards photosynthesis. The photochemistry of light, which is also described in the literature as 5PS2, that's how much energy the photosystem 2 is able to handle, can be measured just by measuring maximum fluorescence and steady state fluorescence. So for steady state fluorescence, we turn on a modulated light. It's very fast pulse light that our detector is able to pick up also at a fast pulse. But it's very small compared to the actinic light, which is the light driving photosynthesis. So we do want to do this in saturating or very high light conditions. You're also able to perform what we call dark adapted photosynthesis in the absence of light, but that gets you some other parameters that can be useful as well. And so what we get here, if you follow the cursor, when we have just the modulated light that's pulsing, we get F0. When we turn on the actinic light, fluorescence does go up a bit, but still not very much. You can see here on the left there are no units. Fluorescence does not have units, which is why we're looking at ratios right here. We have to look at the ratio of maximum fluorescence to steady state fluorescence, just because it does not have any units. And then once we turn on a saturating pulse, this would be the brightest light we can possibly get with this system, then we're able to get the maximum fluorescence. And so that would be this spike here. And the difference between those two would be your delta F, and then Fm prime is, of course, that spike. From this, we can also get electron transport rate. So using a few ratios, and I would be the intensity of the light. Alpha would be the absorptance of the leaf to light. We're able to get the electron transport rate. Let me just check on this and see if we're getting any good data. You might be hearing a beep occasionally. That would be the instrument logging a data point. So I've got it running an automatic light response curve. Started out a high light, and we're working our way down to low light. I'm not sure how well this is going to go because, like I said, I had to cut a plant off of a tree outside. So the plant in my booth is not doing anything right now. So. With fluorescence light curves, typically you'll see a very large spike. The largest spikes occur when there is no competing process. So in the dark, essentially, is when you get the largest fluorescent spikes. And then we'll see smaller spikes as we get higher light intensities. So at the end of a fluorescence light response curve, you're supposed to get something like this. Our data will not be quite that good. Actually, not at all. But thanks for your patience anyway. Typically, you would see... So we have 5PS2 derived from fluorescence. We also have 5CO2 derived from photosynthetic rate minus the... A dark, which is the respiration rate, divided by light intensity, multiplied by the absorptance of the leaf, which is typically 0.8. We can compare those two to to see how well the plant is using light. So the theoretical minimum quantum requirement, which is a long way to say that in theory, if everything was going great, you would need 8 electrons to fix one molecule of carbon dioxide. For C3 plants. For C4 plants, it would be 12 electrons. So you can easily look at this slope and see, is it 8? Is it lower? Is it higher? So if it's lower, I would question that, and this one might be lower, so I would throw out that data. But if it's more than that, it indicates that the plant is taking in a lot more light to fix one molecule of carbon dioxide than theoretically it should be. So that's a good indicator of stress. The slope depends on the proportion of products of electron transport used for carbon assimilation relative to other processes. So if there are other competing processes going on, it's going to increase that slope. And so that can be a very quick way to see if your plant is experiencing stress or not, which can be a good way to differentiate between your control and your research groups. Whether that's biostimulants or really anything else, you can easily look at this and see, you know, what is my slope, how well is my plant assimilating carbon dioxide when it's illuminated. So we have a bit more time. I'll show you. Well, I don't know how much time we have, but yeah, exactly. So this is just showing we have a variety of different chambers. The fluorescence can only be measured with this chamber, but there are other ways to measure gas exchange with the variety of chambers. And I'm going to go back to our measurements so we can see that. This is plotting the PPFD, photosynthetic photon flux density, so that'd be your PAR value, and photosynthesis, and we're really not getting much. It should be a curve like we saw in one of those slides where it has this nice little shape. This is nowhere near that. And again, on the right side, you'll see 5 CO2 versus 5 PS2. These are all things that can be plotted very easily in the software. There's some defaults for doing that. You can see that our slope is nowhere near what it should be. But the plot that I showed here, that is something that can be mapped easily on the instrument itself. It'll calculate slope. And intercept and all of that, and so you have an easy way to look at this in the field, whether you're in the field, you're in the greenhouse, growth chamber, in the lab, you're able to plot this quickly without having to use a computer or anything. So that's really all I've got. I can take some questions, and if you have a lot of other questions or you really want to see how the instrument works up close, you can stop by the LIGHTCOR booth down the exhibit hall. So I'll take questions.
Yeah. One of the knocks on fluorescence has always been its probably variability or consistency. Has anything changed in the technology or the chambers or the architecture to allow that consistency to be improved?
Right.
And second, because this is a portal type system, how many, because it's relative, right?
Right.
How many samples would I need to analyze to give you my statistics? Or any particular variety for any particular stress?
Right. Yeah, so the question basically is, you know, since fluorescence is so variable, how do we account for that? And the real answer is looking at the ratios. So every fluorometer is going to be a little bit different. Even the ones made by LIGHTCOR, the LEDs wear out over time, and the detector wears out over time. You know, you've got some variability there. Plus, you've got variation in plants, which, as you know, can be wildly variable. So, the reason, the way we account for variability is by looking at these fractions, these ratios. So your steady state might be at 3 instead of at 1 here. But if we look at steady state versus saturating flash, then we're able to get a really good idea, a really consistent idea of what fluorescence truly is. And that's why we choose to look at ratios instead of just the raw readings. So
you mentioned earlier though that energy is transferred either photosynthesis or as light or heat.
Mm-hmm.
Does that ratio for instance your plant always stay the same when the fluorescence then comes back to your steady state?
Right. Yes, it typically does. Yep. Each. It's very conserved. It's very conserved for all plants. This ratio of fluorescence to heat, and it's especially conserved in that particular plant. So you've got a specific number of chlorophyll in each leaf, things like that. So. It's very conserved for each plant, and then each species is also, we see a lot of repeatability with this. Yes? Excellent question. How many measurements can you make an hour? Well, as we saw here, even though this wasn't a great example, you can do a light response curve in 20 minutes. You can do CO2 response curves in about the same amount of time, so that would be looking at one particular leaf. So you could get 3 leaves per hour. That's just one way to do it. You can also perform survey measurements, which is a faster way to get a lot of replicates. And basically, what you're doing there is looking at what is the plant doing right at this instant. I'm not going to change how much light it's getting. I'm not going to change its temperature. I'm not going to affect it in any way. I'm just going to see what is it doing at this particular time, at this particular state, with this amount of light. With survey measurements, it typically takes one or 2 minutes for a measurement, so then you can get a lot more replicates. You can even perform survey measurements with fluorescence. It doesn't have to be a light curve. The fluorescence measurement itself really only takes a quarter of a second. We provide a very quick saturating pulse, and then the modulated light is pretty steady as well. So when you incorporate fluorescence into survey measurements, you can get through about 1 or 2 every minute, or 1 to 2 minutes per leaf. So. Exactly. Like we saw here, I just started it and then left it. You could go get coffee and come back, and we typically don't recommend like leaving it unattended all day. But yeah, you can go ahead and run automated programs. We've got a few set up on the instrument itself. You can also create your own if you want to, do something fancy where you run through different light intensities and CO2 concentrations. You could do nested automatic programs like that too. So, any other questions?
Eric's going to have it set up at the light core booth as well.
Yep. I'll have this running. Like I said, the plant in my booth is not doing anything. I even gave it a nice low light level, but it doesn't want to cooperate. So, but I can still give you demonstrations on how to use the instrument, what types of numbers you'll see, things like that. So, yeah, feel free to stop by.
Okay. Thanks, everybody, for coming to the workshop.